Good evening, everybody. So today's many people here tonight and this evening, and lots of people come from different backgrounds and different culture, and yeah, it's such a diversification here. And then we all of us, you know, have our different background, isn't it? And different upbringing. So then, of course, we have our views and opinions, isn't it? So that we really believe that, you know, that we've been brought up, that we've been told since we were young. So then sometimes we believe that, and we hold on to the views, you know, our own views and opinions. And sometimes leads to lots of disputes and argument, quarrel and war and fight. And this is because of we all being affected, you know, influenced by our own conditioning. We've been told, you know, the way we brought up. That's why I remember when I first came to the West. So, like, you know, because your upbringing is different, something seems to me that, you know, that is normal to others, but when I look at it, it's abnormal for me, you know. And then the other way around, the other person think that I'm not normal, you know. So we all have our own views of and opinions, the way we perceive things. So then for one of the example that, you know, I give is just like some of the very hot topics is a controversy issue, like the same-sex marriage. So I make it very clear here, I'm not here to provoke same-sex marriage, but I just would like to talk about how these perceptions, how it works, because perception is one of the very important functions of mind. So how that it works, and I would like to talk about that actually from the Buddhist perspective, how we view, what is our view on this issue. So, and for Buddhists, you know, one of the precepts that are more related to this sexuality, that is the third precept, isn't it? So to refrain from sexual misconduct. So, and actually it's remind me that many years ago when I was in Singapore, and then there was a little boy, he was only 5 years old. So because morning we have the chanting, we chant the five precepts. So then this little boy, he looked at the chanting. Then he went through each one. So the first one, second one, and then he came to the third one, sexual misconduct. He's not really understand what it really means, like to refrain from sexual misconduct. Then he asked his mom, what is sexual misconduct? Of course, mom looked at him, oh, go and ask that venerable. So, and this little boy, 5 years old, little boy, come up to me. Okay, he said, you know, venerable, reverence, he addressed me reverence. He said, what does it mean by to refrain from sexual misconduct? And how do I explain to a 5 years old boy, you know? What is sexual misconduct? So basically, we have to understand the spirits of this precept. Actually, basically, is to we keep our promise to be a trustworthy person, to be a truthful person. Like we make the commitment, like, you know. So I explained to him, like, you make a promise. It's just like your parents, your father and your mom, they make a promise that they keep their relationship, they look after each other. And that is a promise to be honest, to be truthful. Then that is the promise that you keep. Regardless whether you are same-sex marriage, you keep to one partner. That is, you know, whether, you know. So sexuality is sexuality. So whether it's a man to man, women to women, or men and women, it's just sexuality. So for us, we look at the underlying tendency. What is the underlying? You know, that is the lust. Whether you are women and men, you know, men and men, women and women. That is the underlying is the lust, isn't it? Regardless what sexuality, you know. So that is that we being honest, you know, we being truthful, we keep our promise. So just I explained to him in this way. So amazing. Even like sometimes we think that we are honest, you know, and we not be able to look at the underlying tendency. You know, it's like sometimes that I notice that, you know, this dishonesty, you know, in the society, that is really like a lot of people think that they're honest, you know, but actually, you know, that we not be able to look at the underlying tendency of the dishonesty. Just for example, like most of the people, we think that we are basically okay. Sometimes we cheat a little bit. It's okay to cheat a little bit because basically I'm still a good person, so that we can look into the mirror and say, okay, well, you know, I'm a good person, I'm still good, and I still have the benefits of, you know, cheat a little bit, you know. It's just like, it reminds me of a joke, like one small boy. So he went back to, he just came back from school, and he told his father that he had taken a pencil from a friend. Then the father said, "How come you do such a thing? You know, it's not a nice thing to do. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't have done that. How come you take a pencil from your friend? You know, that is it's not a right thing to do. You know, if you want a pencil, you know, you just let me know. I can get it for you, if you know, as many as you like, you know, from the office. You just let me know how many you want. I get it from the office." You know, then this is how we tend to justify, isn't it? Because our perception is that because the money is not involved, you know, like it's very different. If we take money from someone's purse or from the petty cash, we have a sense that we are stealing, isn't it? We feel that. But by doing this, we think that it's okay. And for example, like illegal download, we think that it's okay because everybody doing it. But we look at the underlying tendency, what driven us doing that. The greed, isn't it? The greed underlying is that. So we look at the underlying tendency, it's not the object itself, you know. So that is the underlying tendency that driven us to do that. So another thing that is very common as well, like, you know, people think that it's okay to do that. Like sometimes like wife like to pull a few notes from the husband wallet. So they think that it's okay. Because they said, you know, well, you know, my husband money is my money as well, you know. And of course, my money remains my money. So this is, we try to justify, you know. So because of the perceptions that we justify that it's okay, we just cheat a little bit, and basically we're still a good person. We not be able to look at what is the underlying tendency. We are driven by that greed. So that is that is the greed. We not be able to look at this. So then we try to just say, okay, it's okay. So then regardless whether it's, you know, like whether you steal $1, $2 or 1,000, it's still stealing, isn't it? It's still not honest. Dishonesty. So that's like we for us that we really look at what is the underlying tendency of the problem. So we are not looking at the object, looking at the thing, you know, outside. We always think that the person outside, the object outside, they are the cause of our problem. So then we are looking at the wrong place, isn't it? So we not be able to know where is the cause of the suffering. That's like, that is how, you know, this is from the Buddhist perspective, that how we look at things. So today I like to explore a little bit on this perception, because this perception is really it's really affect us and influence us, you know, our whole life, our happiness, our relationship, our health, you know, that is influence us. Because each one of us, you know, we have this, we have certain very deeply embedded belief, the possibility in life, you know, our possibility in life. And rarely we question and investigate. So, doesn't mean that some of the things that we believe some things for a long time, doesn't mean that we have to believe it for the rest of our life, isn't it? That is the perceptions, you know, that how we perceive things. So in psychology, they call this perception as premature connective commitment. So premature, that is a premature stage. It's a very initial stage. So connective, that is how we cognize, how we interpret the world, and how the world interpret for us. Then the commitment that we because we fix ourselves into a particular reality, then we imprison ourselves in a fixed mode of perception. Then we believe in that is a reality. We put ourselves in the box and we label that, and this is, you know, this. So there are a lot of experiments that have done, you know, the psychologists that to question the limitation of perception. For example, one of the experiments they have done, that is like India, like the baby, like this baby elephant. So the baby elephant, they use just a chain, so they tie on the foot, you know, the leg there, and onto a stake that is just enough to keep the baby elephant. So as the baby elephant grow up, it's a big elephant. So actually, the elephant will not really question that, you know, he will not run away, he will not try to break through that chain, because to him that he been committed to that he been chained, he cannot move. So even though when the baby elephants grow up to be a big elephant, he will not run away. This is a perception, because we've been reinforced there. Another experiment they have done, that is the raise this kitten, you know. So the kitten. So one of the kitten they put into the room that is with all the horizontal straps, you know, that all the horizontal. And the other one, you know, they painted the whole room, you know, with all horizontal straps, and then the other one, the room is all vertical. So they raise a kitten. So as the kitten grow up, you know, there's a cat, you know, grown up cat. So when they swap, you know, they swap the vertical to the horizontal to the vertical. So you know what happened? They can't see the kitten that grow, the cat that grow up, you know, from the vertical. They can't see, like, for example, that is the table, like where you have the horizontal, you know, that you have any plank, any wood there, they can't see. And the other way around, the other one can't see the vertical. So this is how that, our perception, how it works. Because it works in a way that our initial sensory experience, you know, that how we interpret the world, how we see the world, the initial sensory experience, and that actually the structure, the very anatomy and this psychology of the nervous system. You know, our body built, our psychology of the nervous system. So it works in such a way that, you know, ultimately it's just keep reinforce the original one, the early stage. And this is how. So then we keep reinforce that. And then from the perceptions, you know, we develop a view, a certain views of how we view things. And from that, the views we carry into our consciousness. So next time again, we keep reinforcing. So it's just like how people brainwash, you know, the child. You know, from young, they brainwash them. I remember one of our supporters, she told me when she was young, when she was a little, when she go to school every morning, she used to pass by a railway track. So sometimes she can see that the train pass by. So you know what her mom told her? Mom said, okay, so if you are a good girl, you will see the train. So of course that day, whenever she can't see the train, she was very upset. She told me that she cried and cried because she thinks that she's no good. Because she can't see the train because of she's no good. And because the early stage, you know, the childhood, a child, that they just believe that, they take that, you know, and then they keep reinforcing that. And then as we grow up, that is a fix themselves into that the reality. So the perceptions. So actually we are not perceived things purely. Is they are being perverted by our conditioning, and we were told that, you know, this is not right, this is right. For girls should do girl things, for boys should do boy things, you know. And that is how, and then we've been trapped in that. We believe that. And then we believe that, and then that's why it's influence, you know, our confidence, you know. That the possibility in life, you know, then we believe that because we've been told. So I remember when I was in Thailand. So then this is how I was a bit shocked when at the first temple that I stayed, and the belief that women are is a bit they're a bit. The monk is a bit they're noble. So women is a bit like filthy. We don't dare to touch monk things because they are more holy. The women is more, you know. So I remember when I was there, and it's a nunnery in the south. So and that day, and some visiting monks come to visit the nunnery. So he left his bag outside the hall, and then was raining. So the other egg precept, they call it egg precept nuns, Meiji, she saw that, you know, it was raining, and she didn't dare to touch the bag. She said, you know, it's raining, and she don't know what to do. And she asked me what to do with the bag. I said, you just move it in. So she said, no, because it belongs to the monk, you know. I cannot touch, you know. This is how they believe, you know. And they believe that. That you know, women is a second class, they are less, you can't do it. And they believe that, they accepted that. That is how they accept. I said, no. I pull it in. I just pick up the monk's bag. I just put it in. And that time I was looking for ordination. I want to become a nun. So I went to Thailand. Then I couldn't find a place to ordain because they don't have a proper monastery to train nuns, you know, to ordain nuns, they don't have fully ordination. So, then that's why I was a bit frustrated. So I remember, and then each time when I meditate, I used to make an aspiration that, okay, next life, I don't want to be born as a woman because I can't ordain. It's just unfair. It's easier to become a man, you know. So I make that determination. No, next life, no. I don't want to become a woman anymore because, you know, it's difficult. Like, it's just like, not being treated, you know, fairly and things like that. So, until one day, when I went out to the monastery, I wanted to go back to Malaysia to get a train ticket. So as I walked past, you know, I think a group of men, and they were drinking and they were gambling. So, and then that moment really woke me up. And I asked myself, why I keep making the aspiration that I don't want to become a woman, I want to be a man. But I asked myself, I said, look at this man, like, they're so close to the monastery, you know, but I don't want to born as a man that, you know, even so close to the monastery, but you not be able to listen to the Dharma, to practice the Dharma. Then that moment, I feel so good about myself being a female. I say, it's okay, you know. Then that this is how we you know. And that's right, then that moment almost I stopped, you know, making that aspiration. I say, it's fine. I'm so happy and at ease the fact that I'm a female. It's nothing wrong being a female. And another thing that's very ingrained in them, that they've been told that, like, female, being born as a female is bad karma. I remember I was really quite disappointed, and I was really strongly disagree with that. And one of the is a quite senior monk. This senior monk is a senior monk. He said that the fact that, you know, we being born as a woman because of we have break the precept in the previous life, the third precept. I said, what? You know, that means that the half of the population of the women that have the same karma. You know, it's just overgeneralized. It just doesn't make sense at all, isn't it? I was saying, no. I don't believe that. You know, how come, you know, all, you know. Then actually, I'm so happy that being born as a female, I have the opportunities to practice, you know, the Dharma, to listen to the Dharma, you know. Then this is how. And then another thing is that, and as all of you know, that at the moment that the nuns monastery, we are raising fund to build the nuns monastery. And of course, I can tell you, to raise fund for monks is much easier to raise fund for nuns. Yes, we have some of those, you know, rich supporters, that they rather, you know, donate money to the monks and to the nuns, because they believe that they've been told that if you offer, you know, you make offerings to the monks, you got more merits. If you got you offer to nuns, they have less merits. You know, then this is how we've been told, and then we believe that is, you know, and that is all the, this is perception. You know, perception is very subjective, isn't it? Each one of us, like, we look at the same thing, we have a different response, isn't it? Because we have different background. Because we come from different conditioning. Like, for example, we have someone that's really a phobia. She's so afraid of dog. She see dog, she jump up onto the bench, she scream. Then I ask her, I said, why are you so afraid of dog? Have you been bitten by a dog? She said, no. But she said she can't explain why. They said some of them, even not from this life, even from the previous life, react in that way. And she said that she's so afraid of dog. And the dog have, you know, but other people look at the dog, oh, it's so lovely, it's so nice. But we are looking at the same thing, isn't it? Why we have a different, you know, reaction? Because we come from different background, different conditioning, because our perceptions, we are not perceiving things purely. It's been perverted by our conditioning, our likes and dislikes. So, for example, like each one of our perceptions of how old we consider old is different, isn't it? I remember one of our supporters said that because of the grandmother needs high care, because they're unable to look after the grandmother, because they can't do it 24/7. So they send the mother to, they send the grandma to a nursing home. And of course, initially, her grandmother was quite, had the resistance towards that. She said, no, I don't want to go to this nursing home. Her grandmother is 90 years old. She said, this nursing home is for old people. You know, this is how, you know, and also I noticed myself too, as I grow older, my standard of old, you know, change. when I was young, so I think 30 is pretty old. So now when I grow, now I'm 50, I still think that I'm a spring chicken. So this is how we bend towards to our likes and dislikes, isn't it? What suits us? So we want to see what we want to see. So actually we are not really perceiving, you know, things purely. We're being powered by our likes and dislikes. So that's why we have to challenge, you know, to investigate, to question our perceptions. Because we've been taught that way, then we grow up, we think, we believe that, you know, this is the reality. So then we don't dare, we think that, oh yeah, you know, I can't do that. It's just like, for example, if a female being told that, you know, you're second class, you can't do it, then they think that they can't do it. And also I remember got one monk, you know, he was, when he was ordained, and then, so he said he liked to knit this beanie, you know, jumper. And when he went back to visit the family was so disgusted that the fact that, you know, oh come on, you know, how come you do this thing to them, that is a female, is a girl thing, you know. So actually it's nothing wrong with men knitting, isn't it? But because we've been taught that, you know, we shouldn't do that. Like for example, like us in our monastery, because we are all nuns, so we got to do all the jobs. You know, so we do all the boy jobs. Like we use a cement mixer, you know. So we insulate, we renovate our own shed, we put in insulation, we do the cement laying floorboard. We do that. And we're using chainsaw and things like that. So that is the boy things, isn't it supposed to be? And because we've been put into the box, you know, we identify, okay, this is, you know, we are in this. And we have been imprisoned, you know, to this fixed modes of perceptions that who we are. And then we think that that's it. We can't do this, we can't do that. And that is, actually it's nothing wrong. You know, like I remember sometimes I read an article, some husband and wife, they swap, you know. So the wife is going to work. So the husband have to experience how is it like to look after the children. So they become house husband. So it's okay to be house husband. So next time you can swap. You know? So because, you know, just because of we believe that, you know, for a long time, doesn't mean that we have to believe that for the rest of our life. We question. We open to that. So we look at it. So why this perception? The Buddha said the perceptions, because of the perception, we develop this view. The reason why we've been wandering in the samsara for countless lifetime, because of we have these distorted views. How we view ourselves. And this view is come from our perception. So we have a particular way of viewing ourselves. So this is how it works. So for example, how we bound by this our views and opinions. So regardless our sexuality, gender, or color skin. But, you know, we all the victims of our conditioning. So the what really bound us, what really prison we keep us in this, we've been trapped by that, you know, in the samsara, is our great hatred and delusion, isn't it? Deep down, what causes the suffering? Just for example, when we have this body and mind. So when we have all this, we have this sense base. When there is an object, when there is a contact, there is feeling arises. So this is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So for example, when we meet someone first time, so the person gives us a very good impression and we like the person. So we feel happy because that person makes us feel happy, feel good. So then immediately we put the label that this person is our source of happiness. This is happiness. So we put the label that. And maybe someone that the first time we meet, that person being a bit, you know, not been a bit nasty to us, maybe said something nasty to us, so we get upset and we don't like that person, you know. Immediately when they, the contact, you know, we hear something that is not pleasing to the ear. So we have these unpleasant feelings. So then we identify that person as unpleasant. Then we think that our suffering, our source of suffering is come from this person, isn't it? So then we put the, we send the person, you know, in the life imprisonment that that person is bad, bad, bad. And this person is really good. This is goody, goody. He's really good because he makes me happy. So we all being perverted by the likes and dislikes. And we are not really seeing the reality. Because that doesn't mean that the person, you know, for example, sometimes that person, that time, the first time you meet that person is a very nice person. That person sometimes can be better to become worse, isn't it? Some people from worse can become better. So, but it's not fixed, but we fix that. We put them, you know, we put them into a box like this is this person. And forever that person is like that. But because like, that person, you know, that we meet, that moment, it's just because maybe that person undergoing some difficulties in life, you know, sometimes when you're not well and, you know, you have some difficulties, you tend to become more cranky and grumpy. And then because of that first impression, then we already identified that person as such a person. And then the person that have a good impression, we say, oh, this is a good person. And this is, I like this and I don't like that. Then we've been perverted by our likes and dislikes. So we are not really seeing things as they really are. We've been perverted, you know. So then it's also restrict our potential, isn't it? So we tend to underestimate ourselves, like our potential, that what we could do, isn't it? Because if we've been told, you know, since we were young that, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, you should do this, you should do that. So then we will not, we don't question. If we don't question, then we just go along. So we think that's it. But we have more than that. So when we question, you know, the limitation of this perception, we leave it open. So we question. Just like Achancha said, not sure. We are not sure about that. So then we become more open to things. We don't jump into conclusion. We don't straight away say that, okay, that's it. You know, then we open to that. Then we are not thinking in the box. Actually, we are outside the box. Because when the more we question the limitations of perceptions, when we keep it open, then we are naturally become a kinder and compassionate person. So when we put ourselves in the box and put other people in the box, then we have the separation, isn't it? That is the separation that you are in this, I'm in this. So we don't have that inner connectedness. We are just a being, just human being. We share the same thing. We are bound by our greed, hatred and delusion. We all bound by that. We all have the, regardless what sexuality, what gender, what skin color. We all have the same. We all have the great hatred and delusion. We have the inner connectedness. And we can see the suffering of others. So what hurts us, it hurts others, isn't it? So we know that we have that. But because of this perception, there's that really, you know, separate us from others. Because we identify others, we put others into the box, and we put ourselves in the box. Then we create lots of suffering, not only for ourselves, but to others. And we are not being able to just open, you know, to others, to be able to embrace. So regardless what nationality that person is, whether female or male, is okay. You know, we all have the same, that great hatred delusion that we've been bound by that. And we all share the same sufferings. We all, you know, suffer because of that. So when we be able to, again and again, to question and look at it, you know, that, yeah, so I'm not sure. you know, then we don't hold on to our views and opinions. So it's not that we shouldn't have any views and opinion, but we respect others' views and opinions. That because that based on the understanding that we have a different conditioning, so we've been bring out in we have a different background. So even we have a we perceive things differently. So we do not make others people wrong. It's okay that, you know, we respect others people's view. It's just like the like during Buddha's time, that Buddhas used to have this debate, you know, with other sects. So the Buddha will say, okay, I disagree with what you said. This is how my practice. But we do not condemn the other person. Said that you are wrong. You shouldn't do that. You know, that it's okay. We just speak about Dharma. We just say, this is my practice. I disagree with your views. And this is my views. And this is what I believe. This is what my practice. But we do not condemn others. So that is have this mutual respect. So then we become more open and become more tolerant, you know. So if we try to make the other person the same, then this is not tolerance, isn't it? If we be able to accept the fact that other people are different, it's okay. It's okay that the other person is different from us, you know. It's okay. We'll be able to embrace. So it's fine. We don't try to make the other person exactly the same as we do. Then that is become intolerance. It's not tolerance, isn't it? Because we try to make everybody the same. We are not the same. So because it's based on the understanding that the fact that we have a different conditioning, that's why we see things differently. So it's not right or wrong. It's just that we are being conditioned in that way. We see things in a certain way. But we do not just, you know, believe, we do not make other people wrong. But if we hold on to the, it's not that, even some people argue that, you know, what I'm doing is right, you know. And like, for example, like someone said to me that, I was being humiliated because I keep the five precepts, people think that I'm silly. So I said, it's fine if people think that you're silly. Because if you get upset, get angry, and you argue with that person, then you're holding on to your own views and opinions. So right views doesn't mean that we are right, the other person wrong. So right views that rights in the context that leads us to freedom, to happiness. Because if we hold on to the views that, you know, and then we make other people wrong, and then we got upset, we got angry with them, and that is not doing us any good, isn't it? So it's okay. Even the whole world can argue with us, we do not argue with them. Even though we know that what we are doing is right. So when we holding on to the views, then it become wrong view, isn't it? Because we create lots of suffering for ourselves and for others. Dispute, war, quarrel, and fight. And that is not leading to peace. So when we have that, we open, you know, to the, you know, whatever views, even people have, others people have different views and opinion, is fine. We don't try to change them to make them have the same views and opinions. And the other, that we have the kindness and compassion, a true loving kindness is that no matter who the person is, we have no barrier between ourselves and others. We open the door of our heart to others. We allow others to come into our heart. That is a true loving kindness. There's no barrier between ourselves and others. That is a true loving kindness. It's not that, oh, if you know, if you are Buddhist, you know, then I like you because we are same. It's no, you know, a true loving kindness that is unconditional, isn't it? That it's okay, no matter who you are, because we understand that all beings just want to be happy. So that be based on the understanding of that all beings is, you know, then we be able to embrace and forgive others' shortcoming. Because we also have shortcoming, isn't it? Because we share the same. We all have the great hatred and delusion. We all have these defilements. So that is how this really help us, it's really freeing us. If we don't hold on to our views and opinions, and then it's really freeing us. Then we have more kindness and compassion towards others to be able to embrace others. And also it's okay. The fact that if other people are different from us, it's fine. We not try to make the other person to be the same, exactly the same, is okay. The fact that we are different. So we embrace that, we accept that, we respect. That is important, the respect. If we have that respect towards each other, then only with that, then we lead to peace and calm. When there is love, there is peace, isn't it? When there is no love, there will not have peace. Isn't it? When we have no, the opposite of love is what? Hatred, isn't it? When we are upset, angry, do we have peace? No, isn't it? Burning inside, you know? The mind is just go on and on, it's inside, it's really burning. So when there is no love, there's no peace. So when there is no love, there is no peace. So when there is love, there is peace. So the more we be able to really, you know, challenge and investigate the questions, our perceptions, then the more we open up ourselves, that is not sure, it's okay. The fact that other people is different, they have their own views and opinion, is okay, it's fine. So we be able to embrace that. Then that is ultimately we are the one who benefit, and we really freeing ourselves to not to be present in our, we being present in our perceptions, how we view things, and then we will not be able to think outside the box. So we are inside the box, we bound by that. Then that is leads us to a lot of suffering. So ultimately, we are freeing ourselves. Ultimately, we are the one who benefit. So I offer this for your reflection, and may this teaching be of benefit to all of you. So any questions and comments? Okay. So there's one of the questions says, they said, Bamba Lady, is investigations of underlying tendencies part of careful attention? There is Yoniso Manisikara, work of the mind that goes to exhaust. Yes, because, yes, it's true. That's because of, that's like why we have to, why we practice meditation. We train our mind. So actually it's nothing so special. For example, like we have this breath meditation. So it's nothing so special with the breath. But we just train our mind to focus on the breath so that we be able to pay attention to what's going on. So this is a training of the mind. Because a lot of time, whatever emotion comes out, so if we don't train our mind to pay attention, we just very easily overcome by the emotion, isn't it? And then we got upset, we get stuck in. And then for example, like someone said something nasty to us, and then we immediately just react, you know, then say something nasty back to that person. But if we practice mindfulness, you know, this, careful attention, you be able to pay attention, you know, to this moment. For example, when we talk to someone, and maybe someone said something that is really not very nice to us, we can feel inside that we are not happy. So that is because we have been practicing, we train the mind in that way that we pay attention to our to what's happening in this moment. So then we know that, yeah. So we don't go along and we do not that get sucked in to say something nasty. So we hold that. We just acknowledge that, yes, this moment I'm not happy. I'm not happy with this, you know, and this person said these things to me. You know, I know that, you know, I'm not happy. And that is a very subtle ill will, you know, hatred that arises in this moment. So okay, we just, you know, then we acknowledge that and we accept that. So we recognize that. The first thing we have to recognize that first, that is what happening. It's not, we not try to deny what happening right now. So we just, you know, we recognize that, okay, yes, anger arises. Then we recognize that, then we acknowledge and we accept that. And we let it be. And this anger will subside by itself. But it needs a lot of practice that to be able to catch, you know, when that moment, when this unwholesome, this defilement arises. So that's why this investigate of this underlying tendency. That's why sometimes it's important that sometimes like, for example, like, we have lots of thinking going on, like for example, before we meditate and things go on, and the thinking we just couldn't stop the thinking. So please don't try to stop the thinking. The more you try to stop the thinking, you have more thinking. So the best way that is to you change your thinking. You know, like a wise the Buddha said is wise reflection. Rather than try to stop it, you change it. Then it's just like you put a brake, not to allow the mind go further. Because sometimes the mind go on and on and on. And oh, how come this person said that? Oh, this person is always like that. Oh, I remember last week, you know, he did the same thing, you know, this person. Yeah, he's always like that. I remember I know him since, you know, 10 years ago. He was like that, you know. Then our mind go on and on. From this moment to 10 years, you know, ago, you know, this is how, then we go in, then that's why if we change to reflect something else, you know, or we deliberately bring a thoughts of loving kindness to a sad person, we say, oh, maybe this person doesn't mean say this, you know, oh, me too, you know, sometimes I said things that I didn't mean to, and some people got upset. So then we, you know, we change. Then it's like a break. We don't go further. So that's why it's good that sometimes that to we have this wise reflection. We reflect, you know, so on that moment to help us to stop, not to try to stop the mind from thinking. Because the more you try to push the mind to stop that, your mind, you know, you think more. So then you use all these skillful means to stop the mind to go further. And the second question is that, Venerable, lovely to listen to your talk. No questions to ask, but simply want to thank you for trying to get us on the right track. Valuable teaching. Thanks so much. Okay, I like that. So any questions or comments? Yes. Mike.
Ajahn Hasapana, excellent, excellent, excellent topic. Very good topic.
Thank you.
That's problem solving. I use this for problem solving, you know. I'm glad you say that you change your perception to solve the problems in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we've been too self, you know, we brought up, you know, to think that we are only right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was saying, it's hard to see others' it's easy to see. No, it's
others.
Hard to, no, sorry. It's hard to see our problem. It's easy to see the other's problem, you know. What I find is, when there's a problem, when you change the perception, okay?
Yeah.
That feeling also changes, you know.
Yeah.
You know or not? Yeah. Because, you do find that way? Like, because your thoughts on it. If you think good, you feel good.
Yeah.
There's only one. Good, think good, feel good, you know.
Yeah.
So you can't say you think good and you feel good and bad and the thing. So when you have the negative feelings come, when you have negative perception thing, you know, so you change it, you know, suddenly you keep giving on the good thoughts, it melts away the negative feelings. You find that way?
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. It's remind me like, actually it's remind me of like, you know, when you first come to stay in the monastery as a young nuns, you know, you have to live with people that's from different backgrounds. So we are so different, isn't it? So of course we have our view and our opinion. So I feel, poor me, I have to put up with these people. Then after that, hang on a minute, I told myself, other people have to put up with you too. Sometimes you always think that poor me, you know, I have to put up with others. But actually we never thought of other people have to put up with us, isn't it? So that's why it's easy to see the fault of others, we can't see ourselves. So that's why it's good that, you know, we say, okay, just Achancha, the famous saying, each time you remind yourself, not sure. So any more questions or comments? Yes, please give.
I'm trying to put it into words, that's why I hesitated for so long. It was from the very beginning of the talk when you were talking about cognitive thoughts and psychology,
mm-hmm.
and you were discussing how what you're brought up with, especially religion-wise,
mm-hmm.
Is kind of, the word you used was brainwashing
mm-hmm.
for certain mm-hmm. things. My son here, Jakai, he goes to the kids' Dharma classes with Teacher Lee mm-hmm. on Sundays, and mm-hmm. he really loves every mm-hmm. aspect of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
I do worry, though, sometimes making the right choice as a young child,
mm-hmm.
getting him into the beliefs of my own.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion on
If that he believe in love, it's because love lead to peace, isn't it? So, because we have to understand that because we are not enlightened, we still have the sense of self. So, it's just the teaching of all the Buddhas. So, we refrain from unwholesome, we purify the mind, then we do good and purify the mind. So you are encouraging him to go towards the wholesome. So the Buddha said, you know, that the Buddha never said that this is right, this is wrong. What is wholesome and unwholesome? So what you are trying to help your son to go towards the wholesome, to know how to share, to know how to love. So in that, you are really shaping in to the right directions. I remember just recently, yesterday, a boy also from the Dharma class, and I asked him, I said, okay, what have you learned from your class? He said, oh, my teacher taught us how to love mom because Mother's Day coming. Actually, what's wrong with that? You don't have to worry with that. If your son is a loving person, that is only one result. He's at peace of mind.
So what I'm getting from you is, because Buddhism is such a way of life, more than rules and regulations like a lot of other religions, I'm just pointing him in the right direction and making him a wholesome person without the brainwashing side of it, without the rules and sins and the...
But actually, you know, that as long as we're not enlightened, we still have bound by the perception. That's why we have to change our perception. This is a gradual training. It's just like, you know, we want to cross over the other side of the shore. We have to make use of the raft, isn't it? When we cross over, we do not need it. So that's why we still have to hold on to something wholesome. And it's still a perception, but these perceptions eventually lead you to freedom. But the other type of perceptions, that the other type of brainwash that leads us to unwholesome, that is suffering. So this is a gradual training. We cannot say, oh, let go, we can't. You know, this is how the practice is a gradual training. So that is, yes, we still have the sense of self, but our sense of self is not so concrete. It's more fluid. You know, then that is, they are not so hard. We become softer, but we be a wholesome. Then when we have the whole, when we do wholesome things, good things, we are happy. When we are happy, we can easily calm the mind easily, then we have peace. When we have peace, then where the wisdom, the insight arises. That is how it's a gradual training. So it's just wonderful that your son, that, you know, to have the opportunities, that he must have made lots of good karma. It's true, you know, must, you know, to, you know, we don't take it for granted, like, it makes lots of good karma to have that, you know, be able to come. Like one of the Chinese saying that we believe that that is a basic goodness. Each one of us, when we born, we all inherently good. It's just because of our conditioning. So that's why we have one of the saying we said that, we determine our life at the age of 3. That is one of the Chinese saying, and that is that because like when you were young, it's just like you have a young sapling, you know, when it's grow up. Grow in a slanting way, you know, then it just go that way. But when he's young, you shape it, you know, make it straight. So that's why he's very fortunate.
Thank you very much.
So, yes, any questions or comments? Yes. Is it answer your questions or make sense to you?
Okay. Yes, I just have a question in relation to practicing loving kindness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in situations where the other person is in a very negative state of mind, mm-hmm. self-protection or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this concern of being vulnerable because this person has so much negativity, mm-hmm. when you're trying to be open and mm-hmm. loving.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in lots of situations, you know, mm-hmm. in life where mm-hmm. there'll be somebody that is, for some reason, is difficult,
mm-hmm.
and no matter what you do, it's sort mm-hmm. of, it's very difficult mm-hmm. to change. So are you vulnerable, or what do you do in that case? I mean, okay. how do you manage that so okay. that you don't feel vulnerable?
Yes, to me, I personally, like, I don't try to change that person, and to accept the person. Actually, acceptance is also kindness. You know, when we reject something, what is that? The opposite of acceptance is rejection, isn't it? So when we reject something, that is ill will, isn't it? So opposite of ill will is kindness, loving kindness, isn't it? So when we accept someone, that is kindness as well. And we be able to forgive that person is also kindness. Forgive. No. So,
is that the case even though there's a lot of negativity being thrown back your way?
Yeah.
And abuse or whatever that might be?
Yeah, that's why it's very important, like, practice loving kindness. You have to start from yourself, to love yourself first, to be able to, the loving kindness, you have to love yourself before you love another. You have to have it within yourself first. The more you have it, it makes it easier to give. If you don't have it, it's very difficult. So we have to generate the sense that you feel that love, the warmth within your heart. That is, you know, when you have that, you wish yourself well. You know, may I be well and may I be happy. You know, that it's okay. We accept, like, the person is being negative, it's okay. We accept that. I just share with you, we have someone that was being abused by her husband for many years. So she left her husband. And she said to me, she said that, you know, I don't want to have any hatred to my ex-husband. even though he had, you know, been abusing me for all these years, but she said that I don't want to carry this with me because it's not really doing me any good. She said, how come I have sent loving kindness to him? Because each time when he think, oh, may he be well and happy, oh, what he had done to her is all emotional. It's difficult. The hatred immediately, you know, the anger immediately come up. So, and I told her, I said, no, you don't try to force yourself to have loving kindness towards your ex-husband, but you can always wish yourself, may I have no ill will towards my ex-husband. You can always wish that. That is easier, isn't it? It's more doable. So you can wish yourself that, you know, may I, you know, no longer, you know, that being affected by this negativity, this negative thoughts, this negative energy, may I be, you know, free from that. So you wish yourself well. Not try to send loving kindness or try to change that person. Some people do loving kindness. They thought that they send loving kindness to that person, and then they keep doing that, and then come back to me. You know, I've been sending loving kindness to this person, and this person still so nasty to me. No, maybe don't send loving kindness. Try to make that person like us. You know, actually, ultimately, that we are the one who benefit. The more we can embrace, the more we be able to forgive, to let it go, forgive others and forgive ourselves, then ultimately we are the one who benefit. We free ourselves because the holding on is lots of suffering if we can't let that go. So you wish yourself, you know, that not that is this is your practice. Loving kindness is that you have good wishes towards yourself. You sincerely wish yourself well. May I be well and have good will towards ourselves. So is it make sense to you? So answer your question?
Yes, I think that's been quite useful. Thank you.
Okay. So any more question? Oh, there's one question here.
I just wanted to add something like that and reinforce something that you said earlier, actually, which is that business of needing to be kind to yourself as well as to the other person. Because I work in an area where I encounter this dilemma all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to understand that sometimes to be kind to the other person, the best thing you can do is to also be kind to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much, I think, putting yourself first as putting yourself on the same level as the other mm-hmm. person and saying I'm just mm-hmm. as important here because if I allow myself to be run into the ground mm-hmm. by this other person, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be any good to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just found that's mm-hmm. that. To mm-hmm. me, that's my interpretation mm-hmm. of that middle way
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just thought I'd add that,
yeah.
If it helps.
Yeah. Yeah, actually it's remind me of one someone that I've been counselling, and she told me that like something that she couldn't forgive, like she couldn't forgive her father, that what her father have done, you know, when she was young, you know, and being abusive. And then she'd been working with that. And then one day she come and talked to me. She said, actually, I realized that the fact that I can't forgive my father, actually, I can't forgive myself. Actually, it's come from herself. She said that, you know, she like whatever mistakes that she had done, she couldn't forgive herself. Because actually, she realized it actually come from herself. The fact that she can't forgive her father because she can't forgive herself. You know. Anyone? Okay.
I just share this very important thing to me, you know. Uh-huh. Change in perception again, yeah. You know, uh-huh. I first learned of this in Tibetan Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's called Lojong. You know, you change your perception to solve mm-hmm. problem again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that about a year ago, I thought it is like a maybe from Tibetan Buddhism, could be later saints and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the suttas. It's very much mentioned in the suttas. You know, mm-hmm. the Buddha, He asks us to be mindful of our mind and to change our thinking to solve problems. Mm-hmm. It appears in many, many times in the suttas.
Mm-hmm.
Just to share with you, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's to me, it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you for your sharing. I think that's it. Okay.